In 2013, Nnamdi Kanu founded a separatist group known as the Indigenous People of Biafra, IPOB. A decade later, members of this group are stirring up trouble in the southeast region of Nigeria. Kanu urged his loyalists to take up arms against the country to achieve an independent Biafra nation. Following the launch of a militia by IPOB in December 2020, incidents of violence have increased dramatically in the southeastern region. Attacks by non-state actors, often labeled as unknown gunmen, have continued to this day despite Kanu's arrest in 2021. A group of pro-IPOB supporters are pushing for Kanu's release, including through unlawful means such as enforcing sit-at-home orders on Mondays and other days when Kanu appears in court.
For a Monday morning, Abakaliki Enugu Express Road in Aboyi State will have been a beehive of commercial activities.
But aside from attacking residents who defy the order, either by killing them or destroying their businesses, the enforcers of the curfew frequently have confrontations with security personnel such as soldiers and police officers, often leading to fatalities. However, in a recent handwritten letter, Kanu tried to put an end to the sit-at-home practice. According to his counsel, Aloy Ejimakor, he issued a directive to Simon Epa, a self-acclaimed Kanu disciple who rose to prominence in July 2021. But Epa maintained that the sit-at-home curfew has not been suspended, leading many to believe that the insurgency in the region has gone beyond Kanu's control. Now, it is very important to understand the challenges faced by Nigerians in the troubled region and how security agents are ensuring the safety of lives and properties. Hello, welcome to The Crisis Room, a podcast from Human Angle. I am Anthony Asamota. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the continent and ask the tough questions. This week, our colleague Adejumo Kabir, who has extensively reported on the crisis in the southeast, engages in a very, very important conversation with one of the security operatives in the front lines of the war against terror in Imo State. But first, we have Kunle Adebajo here in the studio to give us some context around the crisis. Hi, Kunle. Welcome to the Crisis Room podcast.
Hey, Tony. Thank you for having me.
So before we continue with the conversation, I think it's very important to understand the term which we address these people as. So what do you think the IPOB group should be called? Are they a terrorist? Are they a separatist group? Are they a militia?
Well, yes. The Nigerian government has not minced words. They have even gone to the extent of getting the court to declare IPOB as a terror organization, which they did in 2017. But that was controversial then because it was before the group evolved to become a brutal and violent group that we now see today. But the group itself, I was recently listening to one of Kanu's broadcasts in 2020, and what he said was, you know, a lot of people call them a separatist group, but it doesn't think that is an appropriate label. But it is true that what they are campaigning for is to become an independent republic. But they also seem to be open to the possibility that after they've succeeded, they might then say, okay, we now choose to become part of Nigeria under these terms.
From the intro, I mentioned the name Simon Ekpa.
Yeah.
Who is Simon Ekpa?
Simon was, before IPOB split, Simon was also one of the prominent figures in the group. He is a citizen of Finland and also a Nigerian, the same way Kanu has dual citizenship with the UK. And he is now the leader of a faction known as Autopilot. After Kanu was arrested, there was a lot of disagreement within the group as to how they should react. There's a faction known as the Director of State, DOS, Directorate of State, that believes that, you know, the curfew, the sit-at-home curfew should be suspended, but the autopilot team does not agree, and so they part ways. And Simon Ekpa is the person leading operations and the fight on behalf of the more aggressive faction that is known as autopilot.
I think this kind of speaks to the conversation online that IPOP terrorists are being funded by foreign Nigerians in the diaspora. Like, how true is that? I mean, considering the fact that Simon Ekpa was a military person trained, or he's a citizen of Finland.
Well, yeah, if you check some of his pictures, some of his most popularized pictures on Facebook and social media, there are pictures of him in military fatigue, which means he underwent some form of military training while in Australia.
Can you provide us some insights into the historical and political context of the IPOP separatist group?
Well, yes. I mean, it dates back to pro-independence period in Nigeria when Colonel Ojukwu, you know, declared the Republic of Biafra in 1967, which was a precursor to the three-year-long civil war that the country experienced. And that civil war ended without very adequate measures to ensure that the grievances were addressed and that there was reconciliation between the various ethnicities that were fighting each other. And so, till today, people from the southeast still believe that they are being marginalized by the Nigerian state, and the grievances from the civil war are still very present. And so we have groups like Mosob still agitating for, you know, Biafra, and then IPOB doing so even more aggressively. And so, yeah, that's where we can date all the activism to. And I think it just shows again that the government needs to go back to, you know, the historical origins before it can actually find a lasting solution to the problems.
Fair to say the group was born out of grievances against the government and the wrongs done to a certain group of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What do you think has contributed to the emergence and persistence of the group? Are there still grievances? Are there still agitations against the group of people? Or it's just a man's ego pushing for the separation of...
Well, it's not just a man's ego. Because you would find that the group's campaign are also wildly popular amongst people in that region. Almost in the same way you'd find that even Boko Haram was gained some level of popularity in the Northeast when he first came, because what they were championing was that, you know, the political system is corrupt, the politicians are stealing your wealth, you are getting nothing in return. And people saw this statement as very true. And Boko Haram was offering an alternative to the bitter reality that they've been exposed to. So in the same way, too, IPOP came to say, hey, Nigeria has not done justice to you people. Historically, they killed, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not up to 1 million or 3 million of people during the civil war. And you've gotten nothing for it. And historically, you used to do well. You guys, you have great business acumen. You could do better if you were on your own. And so they are selling this alternate reality of prosperity, of independence, of more freedom. And people are buying into that. So this works for them. You know, the historical grievances nonetheless. There's also the fact that the dividends of democracy, as it is usually said, are not being evenly distributed to the grassroots, and people want solution wherever they can find it, even if it's from somebody calling the country a zoo and saying you should kill everybody who's not one of you.
There would be a lot of supporters on ground for the IPOP movement, would you say?
Oh yeah, on ground and even online, you'd find they have scores dozens, if not hundreds, of Facebook pages and groups where they push their campaigns, and you find lots of people agreeing, you know, with these campaigns. And when you interview people from the region too, we've even seen videos of where their militia men were killing police officers, and the people in the area were not expressing any sympathy for the police. And so it's not that they are isolated. They are able to survive for this long also because they have the support of certain people who have no sympathies for agents of the state.
Yeah. I mean, it's strange that the group is enforcing a sit-at-home order, and you would expect that the populace would actually fight against that. I'm wondering, how does this actually impact local communities and businesses considering the sit-at-home order?
A lot. Currently, we are researching using open source intelligence if there's a way to quantify the effects. Some reports have been done to show how billions of, you know, naira is lost economically to the sabotage, you know, from this enforcement. And you find that even besides the fact that businesses cannot operate on some days, you also find that the general atmosphere of insecurity is, you know, is preventing investment in these places. We've seen that people from that region culturally try to go back home during the festivities, during the Yuletide. But recently, they are now avoiding this because of the risks to their lives. Communities are being abandoned. The people from diaspora cannot return home to spend money, you know, and of course this would have ripple effects on the wider economy.
I think at this point we should listen to an interview done by our colleague Adejumo, who recently connected with a senior police officer who is actively engaged on the front lines of the conflict with the separatist fighters.
So I understand you are in Imo State. How has been the experience so far since we have the issue with IPOB? I understand you moved from one place, local government and all of the hotspots of this criminal gang to different. How has been the situation, really?
So the problem we're having is that these boys, or these men, what they normally do, they do kidnapping, attack police station, under police station, and government facility. And once they are through with that, they will go back to their hideout. So these are the things. And once they kidnap somebody, the people will find them. And what is paining us is that all these people that they are kidnapping, and people that are sponsoring them, is all these evil people from the southeast that I have brought. They don't know what is happening. They will be telling them that they are doing it so that they'll be the people in the southeast, they have freedom, they have Biafra, they have referendum, whatever they promise them. Which all these things now are not the way it is. What they're doing, when those people send them the money, they need to say they're protecting your arms. If police can give accurate, another military agency can give accurate of a weapon, arms and ammunition that is being stolen or being taken from them. If they can give the analysis of the amount of arms that you know that the arms that these people are having in possession are many.
Do you think Nnamdi Kanu does no longer have power over the activities of some of these so-called IPOB militants?
He's no longer in charge.
Okay.
No longer power, he's no longer in charge. The person that is in charge is Simon Eba.
Okay.
And the reason why they are doing all this is because the people that they are manipulating, they are living from Southeast, many people here that are from the rural area, that they don't have means of living, that are not educated. But something is educated, that no one is doing, that have a means of living, that has a job, will not involve themselves in such things like that. So there are people from the rural area that they'll be involved in things like that. They're watching them, telling them that they'll have poverty or their hardship to reduce once they're able to achieve this. Which the people, they are not exposed to society, they're not exposed to reality.
So sometimes in 2020, was it 2020 or 2021 that was in your, in Himo, I met with you and some other police officers combating the activities of these guys. But the last time we spoke, you told me that some of the persons that I met then, most of them have lost their life as a result of combating the terror activities of these guys. What can you say about this? I mean, the general welfare of security personnel that are being sent to combat this deadly group.
We are all in Nigeria. We understand the system and how the system is made. At least got nobody that is in Nigeria that might not one way or another have a relative who is a serving member. You and me know how the government and the system is. Some of them are not able to say it online. But you can do your own preliminary investigation to find out what is going on in the country. Once an officer is sustained injury at the course of duty, nobody should abandon him, at least let the government come to his aid. At least immediately are trying, at least their system, they are trying, at least when the soldier got their injury, their system is trying compared to ours. So I have to be realistic.
So what has been your own motivation? What are those things that keep you going, really?
Nigeria is the only country I have. I see that I have passion for the job, and I have passion that if my country, if my state, if my region is a peaceful place, it will be a better place for everybody.
Kole, are there any prospects of a peaceful resolution?
The way I see it, the challenge of resolution is difficult the same way it's difficult in the northwest and north central part of Nigeria because of the sheer number of actors involved. There is no central figure that you can negotiate with. The central figure that we are all seeing, Simon Ekpa, you can tell that he's not even open to negotiation. He thinks, you know, that they can achieve their aims through military strategies. But besides that, there are also indication that there are other semi-autonomous groups that have commercialized the violence, the conflict, and are just finding ways to abduct people, for ransom, loot businesses and households, and so on. And it's difficult to find somebody who can actually control all the different appendages. And it's why some governors in the Southeast, the governor in Abia State, the governor in Anambra, are thinking that when Nnamdi Kanu is released, they are pushing for his release because they think it will be a way to, you know, encourage people to come to the round table and have discussions. But then again, with, you know, the statements that Kanu gave and the reaction that it faced, it's also possible that Kanu is starting to lose his influence. But I think if he's released, we will know for certain, because again, people would of course doubt the authenticity of the statement that was released and whether it was coerced to do it, whether it was somebody else that forged his handwriting, even though his brother confirmed it was from him. So I still think that would be a huge card that the government can play towards finally resolving what's going on.
Thank you very much for joining us, Kole.
Thanks, Tony.
This is an episode of the Human Angle Crisis Room. Thank you for listening. Our production team are Adejumo Kabir, Anthony Asemota, Kole Adebajo, and Usman Abazana. The executive producer is Ahmad Salkida.